Hey guys, it's Nifty Q. Welcome back to another episode of the Wild Wild Web, where I look to explore the digital frontier through in-depth conversations with Web3 industry pioneers. Now, today I had the pleasure of sitting down with Sasha, a current candidate for the ApeCoin DAO Special Counsel and Governance Steward. Topics we touch on include the origin of the DAO and how it exists today, what he thinks of the current candidates and election process, and what improvements he would make to ApeCoin DAO if he was elected. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Sasha. Remember, nothing you hear on this podcast should be construed as financial or legal advice. That's our vibe, our tribe. I need one. All right, we're live. Hey, my first question here, Sasha. Welcome to the Wild Wild Web pod, by the way. How exhausted are you right now?
Do I look a little tired? It's maybe because I am.
You've been on the campaign trail for the last, what feels like, week. How much have you been sleeping? Have you been eating enough? And how has that experience been?
So I actually applied for Discourse Facilitator first, which was my May. And we had two great people win those positions. And then immediately after, they started the Special Counsel and Governance Steward campaign. And I wanted to get the Special Counsel experience of running just for perhaps a future run. And so I applied for both because the deadline was at the same time for both applications. So I've been on the trail for a month and a half now, basically, to trying to find a spot in the DAO and contribute.
What's the current timeline with the election process finalizing, and how has that timeline
been? One day left. One day, we're good to go.
Yeah. Is it coming down to it?
It seems like it's coming down to the wire. A lot of people are waiting to last minute. There are a lot of delegates that are waiting for their members to cast votes, right? And then they're going to cast their big vote in the end. So that's why it seems like so many votes come in the last day or two.
Okay. I told you before the episode started that a part of those votes will be mine. And I can't remember a time I got this excited for DAO activity. And I feel like that's kind of mirrored by the community a little bit. I think it maybe got started in not the best situation with the special counsel salaries kind of coming under scrutiny from the community that drove everybody into the interest in the DAO. Is that how it kind of went down?
I think that was, when there is sort of something on your mind or like a pain or frustration, then you just need a trigger for things to come out. And I think the community has been frustrated that the DAO is moving slow. There is a bear market. So a lot of owners of a token, right, feel they start to look at different places, like who could help this? And even though the DAO has no relationship to the price of the token or responsibility for it, it's just the market right now. And when people brought up the salaries, which for many people around the world are quite high, right? I mean, it really depends where you live, what else you've done, who you compare them to. But for most people around the world, these are very high salaries. I think it was the trigger to kind of like, well, why do they get them? What do they do? And there is this like also mystery about what special counsel does, which is kind of on them for lack of communication. And then there's a miscommunication in the actual job description where it said it's only 3 hours minimum required. All right. So it said minimum 3 hours, pays $20,000 per month. I mean, I would be up in arms, right? People don't know that they actually work full time now, but that original description hasn't changed. So I wouldn't be frustrated too if I heard that.
You mentioned you've been on the trail for like a month and a half. How is it differentiated from maybe what you expected kind of going in, having applied for special counsel and then now you're obviously second in running for the governance steward?
Yeah. Part of it was to say, I mean, I just wanted to learn more. I think the reason why there's so much excitement about the DAO, and when you said, you're excited around it, because we are creating multiple positions to sort of take the power away from the administrator, which is the company we use in Cayman Islands to, do a lot of the stuff before. So we're trying to decentralize it that way, right? And some people call this centralization because they see a couple of working groups and people in those working groups doing some work. But from the DAO perspective, most of this was done by one company, right? And so we're now spreading it across community members. And so multiple paid positions are popping up. So the experience of running for that is great. That's what I wanted to do. I think that part is the same. There's learnings. Every time you run for something like this, you learn, you know, even if you want zero politics, there's always some politics. You learn how to, you know, what resonates with people, what doesn't. So in that way, it's great. It's something I can take into the future with me. And yeah, I'm excited. I'm glad that so many people are excited, at least around election time. And I hope a lot of you will stick around.
Yeah, I would. I'm definitely going to. And I remember hopping in the ApeCoin or Working Group Zero Discord, and you were one of the first ones that responded to some of the questions I had, which is basically led me.
Good for me. That's how I got your vote. Great.
Yeah. Well, activity, right? Like, that's a huge part. Yeah. Is not being some like Twitter influencer and like having all these followers, but actually being on the ground, working in the Discord, helping folks out, onboarding them into what ApeCoin is and what ApeCoin DAO is doing. That's huge for me.
You know, I got some fire for posting my forum statistics from even some other candidates who don't have as you know, that good of a statistic. And everybody has their weaknesses and strengths, right? So as a candidate, it's your job to emphasize your strength. I in the last quarter, I've received the most likes on the forum by a long shot. More than twice the next person. And yeah, it's a small thing, but like, I can't really game these, right? If people don't like how you reply to them or what you contribute, they're not going to like your post. And also the highest by number of replies. So as far as activity, I think there are other metrics the candidates should be judged by. But if you see a candidate that has zero activity in a DAO pre-election, even after they apply, if they're not active in the thing they're supposedly passionate about, I do think it's, like you're saying, it's a sign, right? Like, you're running, but you know, since May you could have contributed and you haven't. So it breaks my heart to hear that you do. There are people out there who do value that because I've put in a lot of time.
Yeah, and I'm excited to have you here to, you know, just talk about in long form content. One of the things I noticed in these Twitter spaces is like, it's like lightning questions, everybody gets 30 seconds and it feels like a game show almost. And I was like, where's the long form content where we can actually sit down and talk to these individuals? It seemed like that type of long form came through text threads or blog posts or tweets and things like this. So definitely excited, man. I want to get into, you know, what you think you can provide for the DAO through that governance steward position. But before we get to that, I want to get to your background. And kind of how you found yourself in Web3. You founded a mobile gaming esports team, which is awesome. I would love to dive into that, but let's touch on that background, man.
Yeah. So starting with Ukraine, I was studying software engineering, essentially working, you know, on a side business with my dad, and then went to college here in the States. Finished that and, you know, immediately jumped into the field of software engineering. Did that for about 15 years. And then at the end of that, I was also always a gamer. So at the end of that, I started esports team. And there came a time where my company, last company at the time, which was Intel, they laid off our entire department. And I was like, wow, this is a great time to jump into, you know, into esports. And then I bought some Bitcoin. I dabbled a bit. I had no idea what it is like. Unfortunately, it was on that Japanese exchange that got hacked or whatnot. So lost most of it. Yeah, Mt. Gox. So that was my first exposure to Web3, the great world of Web3. And then anyway, after esports, I met during that time a friend who later invited me to co-start a Bitcoin L2 chain, a crypto accelerator in 21. So that was my real entry into Web3, is 2021 early. From there, we had startups come into the accelerator that I helped like filter, you know, interview and select. And some of them were dealing with NFTs. And I was like, well, this looks very interesting, this technology, right? And I dived into it and it became so interesting to me that I actually quit the accelerator after the first season to become a full-time degen and even do some of my own stuff.
The application of NFTs and a couple of these other sectors that we've seen kind of pop up on Bitcoin is interesting to me because I always saw Bitcoin as the hard money, kind of just the peer-to-peer exchange there and maybe even just a store of value. But all of these applications can be built on Bitcoin. And essentially, you could do a lot of what is happening now on Ethereum on a layer 2 on Bitcoin. So I might be generalizing a little bit there, and that's because, you know, my experience is not on the tech side when it comes to Bitcoin stacks and things like this. So can you lay that out for me? What you think the Bitcoin layer two ecosystem can look like in a couple of years?
Yeah, you mentioned the word stacks, which is exactly the name of the L2, right? It's a stacks chain. There's many ways to do L2s, you know, and there's sort of different names for them. And some of them are technical, not L2s and et cetera, if you go into technicalities, but people know them like drive chain, side chain, et cetera, some of them like completely separate and sort of have like this weak reference to original chain. Some of them like stacks have more of a hard reference where for each, essentially what stacks does is that in each Bitcoin transaction, right? I don't know where my arms are. Like you record a record about a block of stacks transactions, right? So you can have like 1,000 stacks transactions and there's a record in Bitcoin that points to, hey, there is going to be a block of 1,000 stacks transactions. So on Bitcoin chain, there's just one record. But then when you can sort of expand that view, you'll get 1,000 stacks, you know, transactions. So that's kind of how you batch it and connect the two chains without overloading the original Bitcoin chain. And that's the main idea behind stacks. I think absolutely has a lot of potential because if you design it in a secure way, similar to how Bitcoin is designed, but you do this sort of batching mechanism, what stacks can then do, by the way, they can also like extend infinite top, you know, it's like turtles all the way down, except it's all the way up, where now you can do a record in on the stacks blockchain, have a clone chain that's even faster than stacks. And like, you know, that record points to 1,000 transactions on that clone chain. Right. So you could have like an app, like a social media app, let's say, you know, Web3 version of Facebook or something that has its own copy of that stacks blockchain that is localized to that one app. So it's much faster than the main stacks chain, but it ties to the main one and the main chain ties back to the to Bitcoin. So there's a lot of innovation happening in that space. And for people who think Bitcoin is the way, is the most secure, you know, chain and the best one. For them, it's extremely interesting innovation that allows them to scale transactions or transaction count per second without moving to like something like Ethereum or Solana or something totally different.
Yeah, outside of the Lightning Network, you don't typically, or the layman doesn't really typically associate Bitcoin with scaling, right? That's the whole thing. Like I even saw some tweets saying, you know, Bitcoin could take NFT market share from Ethereum, and people like laugh at that, but it's like, if you can scale Bitcoin, why not have all of these applications be there? And so it just kind of hit a light bulb in my head that maybe Bitcoin does become this kind of black hole for everything.
It'll be interesting. I am glad to see two different philosophies, sort of, right? I mean, you of course, Ethereum was a similar philosophy. They were both proof of work, but now it's, you know, proof of, stake versus proof of work for Bitcoin. So it's important to have competition. It's important for people to have choices in every, you know, industry, every area. And I'm excited to see where Bitcoin innovation goes. And, you know, I hope Ethereum is secure and stable forever, right? And cannot be messed with by any political party. But it's good to have backup.
Jumping back into that timeline, you mentioned that a couple NFT enthusiasts or founders maybe applied for your accelerator, and that's kind of where you got interested in NFTs. Do you remember the name of the project? Did it ever come to fruition? And then when did you first get started with NFTs? What were the collections that you were first interested in?
The name of the first collection that I bought?
Yeah.
Project? Yeah. It was Alien Boy. It was definitely my first one.
Okay.
They looked so weird and kind of like bad at first, I thought, but the more I looked at them, the more I liked the simplicity and kind of some of the depth that was put into them. So that was shortly after Apes came out, and I just missed the Apes, and honestly I had very little money because after esports we had COVID, I got divorced. There was a depression period of my life. So I came into this crypto scene like almost bare, right? No money. So all I could afford is Alien Boys. And then from there, you know, we went on into a couple other collections. I think there was like Arabian Camels. I think Yeti were right before Alien Boys. But then there was in July, we had Cool Cats. So I actually minted 10 of those, but I was so noob about the trading that I sold most of those cool cats at barely like 0.01 higher price, right? So I was not even accounting for the fees and the transaction cost necessarily. I'm not sure I made money there or if I, you know. So
it's a good story.
It's a great story. So now I look back at the history. I'm like, you minted 10 cool cats and you sold them for 0.01 more. Wow.
Shout out to the Arabian Camel tribute there too. That's awesome.
It was a great time.
So past Cool Cats, at some point, did you enter the Bored Ape ecosystem? I'm assuming you found it.
So I've had eyes on them. I love the, you know, I was in the Discord as a guest and I love the community. I love the idea of it. The founders seem like really understand what Web3 is about. And so I've been wanting to enter, right? So I've been looking for an entry point. And then the Mutants announcement came, right? And I think August or whatnot. And I said, okay, I really need to get into these Mutants. And because I haven't sold all my Cool Cats, I had this one Cool Cat. At the time, the Cool Cat price was 10 ETH or 8 to 10 ETH, right? And the Mutants came out at 3. And I was actually at an NFT meetup with my phone left in my car. So I missed the actual Mutant Mint, which was really not fun because I could have bought one off secondary pretty easily. But anyway, so I come home and the Mutant price like coming to 7 ETH and the cat price are dropping right in the moment. And I'm just like posting, sell the cat, you know, I got to get the Mutant. And I'm failing to sell the cat because it's just market is moving so fast. So I messaged a friend. I suppose he became kind of a friend, but he's an investor that we worked with through the accelerator, right? Who's invested in some of the companies that went through us. And earlier I told him like, hey, you got to buy Bored Apes, right? And this guy is very wealthy. And so literally I told him, buy some Bored Apes. 5 minutes later, he replies like, look at all these apes I got.
Wow.
I was like, oh, good for you. So he got from these apes, right? I knew he had all these apes and then bought some dogs. And I said, listen, I've told you to buy in. Now you're making a bunch of money on these apes and you have this Mutant airdrop, right? And one of the apes you bought, it was like 7 ETH and this Mutant is now worth 7 ETH. So if you just give me the ape, but you can keep the Mutant, it's zero cost basis for you, right? You still have this, it's like costing nothing.
Yeah. Wow, you talked yourself into a Bored Ape at 7 ETH.
Because I was so frustrated I can't buy my own Mutant. You know, this is like my last chance to get into the club. Just like guilt trip this guy. Not really guilt trip, but you know. Because it's like a, listen, if you give your money to a company that manages your wealth, right, they take a percentage. So, you know, he made a bunch of money on my advice and I was going to take a small percentage.
To be fair, I've been in the same scenario. I didn't prompt the guy, but the guy that I got into Bored Ape actually airdropped me one as well, like early, super early on.
Let's
so
go.
I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's very nice. He was just like, listen, this ape makes zero difference in my life, but it sounds like it's going to make a difference in yours. So, you know, you can have it.
Wow.
That was very, very nice. And I capped it until October of last year, where I decided to travel a lot more. I needed, because again, I just finalized divorce in April, so it was a long process. And I also wanted to invest in Tesla. So I sold the ape, bought a Mutant instead to try to keep one leg in the club.
Yeah.
Until finally I sold the Mutant this April.
How has the ecosystem changed within Bored Ape and like the broader Yuga ecosystem since you got in?
Frankly, I know everybody has opinions and talks about it. I think the core Yuga ecosystem hasn't changed much. Like I see this, most of the same apes that I knew in the summer of 21, most of them are building something. It's still a builder, founder, entrepreneur community. There's of course DGen element and, there is like Spaces, Host, et cetera, you know, influencer, different, you know, marketing, but the general vibes, I think, are the same. The only big change I'll say is Gordon having to take a step back. That I think the community feels. I'm sure the co-founders feel that, and we love him, we miss him, and I just hope that he can come back one day because that would be a big loss.
I felt that because I was really into their podcast, and that was where I first connected with Gordon, because I'd never met the guy in person. I didn't go to that Ape Fest in NYC where everybody was kind of meeting Gordon for the first time.
Yeah.
And it did feel like the heart was a little bit ripped from what BAYC was when he said, "Hey, I got to take a step back." You think he'll come back?
I'm not a doctor, man.
Yeah, that's fair.
I hope so. But I think stuff like "fuck it," you know, when they posted about mutants going, I think that was him, right? That's his vibe. And I know Gargo is amazing and other people, they're amazing. But for sure, he adds a very special component that sort of like puts into words how the other team members are feeling. And he's just like that, you know, he's outgoing in his, so he like communicates the emotions of the other members, and he's done it really well. I'm sure Gargo's going to, you know, he's doing great so far. He's going to pick it up, whatever.
Absolutely.
But I, you know, that's the one change in the club that, you know.
It might not even be associated with Gordon, although, again, like he was such a big part of this, and hopefully he does return. But I saw a couple tweets this past week that was like, Bored Apes aren't even punk rock, like aren't even counterculture anymore. Like they are the they basically got VC money. Like it's not cool to be an ape anymore. And it feels weird because Azuki this week and for the better part of a couple months has felt like, oh, we're the counterculture. You know, like we're the cool kids on the block now. Yeah. Did you get a chance to
the mint happened?
What were your thoughts there?
Oh man. At the moment I heard listen, when I hear limited time window mint and I ask how long the window is, and if that answer is less than a couple hours, my ears perk up. A 10-minute mint window sounds insane to me. On the technological side, I cannot imagine why they would ever do that. As a software engineer, it's a nightmare, right? Because you immediately think of all the things that can go wrong within 10 minutes and how little chance you get to fix it. You know, website's overloading, not loading. You know, the traction's not going through. How do you debug, push a new update, and fix it in time for people to have a good experience? So that, to me, is the biggest mistake. Nobody should ever do these small window, like, mints. At least make it an hour, at least, hopefully 2 to 3 hours. And then, so that was the biggest thing. Other than that, I've said my things about some of the Zagabonds past. But as a team, they're executing really great. You know, their marketing is top notch. Obviously, their art is great. I hope to see more utility because the community is also strong. But like all the content and art and marketing are fantastic add-ons for something else, right? Like when you have the base of some utility.
Yes.
I mean, the community pushes you through for like the first year or whatever. But eventually, you want to start add this utility. And then if you combine that with this amazing marketing and this amazing content and this amazing art, then it's so strong. But when the base utility is missing, or maybe there is, I'm just not aware of it, you know, other than being in the community, it's like, I think it can, it's very susceptible to FUD and quick drops in price if one thing goes wrong, just like it did, I guess, today. Or yesterday.
I had Henry the Grape on, who is a special council member for CyberKongs, and CyberKongs is doing another collection drop as well. And it's outside of their voxelized art, and it's more in this, honestly, it's more in this art style of anime and that you see with Azuki. And I think that's a great understanding that you just kind of laid out there. It's like, yes, you can create IP and the community will latch onto it like they did with there's a ton of voxel art, obviously. Punks are another one, but I think CyberKongs noticed that, hey, how do we tell our story? It's hard to tell a story in voxel art, you know. It's a little bit easier, in my opinion, for people to kind of connect with it when it's this anime style art or cartoonized art, and I think CyberKongs saw that as well. Okay, so let's get into your role that you're potentially having as a steward, right? We have the election going on. It's going to last for another, by the time this episode's out, under 24 hours. So we need to make sure, if you're listening to this, we want the vote to go towards Sasha, obviously. My vote will go there. Kind of give a foundation of the origin of the DAO. Maybe we can keep that short. And then what is going on today with the election process?
Well, the origin was that... Yuga and partners dropped an ApeCoin token, right? And a very generic, somewhat generic mission statement on the website, and essentially said, hey, this is the token, this is kind of the DAO, you guys take care of it from here. And, you know, it was off of their hands, and it was very empty. So the first couple months, we just had to vote on things like, how does voting even work? You know, who do we elect? What's special counsel? You know, do we want staking of this coin or not? And what does that look like? So that was like the first 3 to 4 months, just to figure out the very basic structure. And then from there, we had about 6 months of people submitting AIPs, proposals, you know, but there was somewhat decent amount of proposals. But the administrator that we had, the first one, the Cartanger, was kind of slow with it. I don't know the details. I'm not going to say, you know, too many bad words, but I just know that they were slow and not very responsive. So we sort of like almost lost that period of time. And then the community decided to change the administrator to what we have now, which has been much better. With that, we decided, okay, let's take power away from them and spread it across community members. So that's how the first Working Group Zero was born. And the job of that was just, hey, let's try to figure out how do we spread that. So the Working Group Zero was kind of an emergency group. And then we're like, okay, we can't have it forever. Like, we need to figure out the better structure. So Working Group Zero decided, okay, first of all, we're going to give forum administration to 3 people. Those are called discourse facilitators or forum facilitators. And then we're going to create these other working groups, which is a terrible name, I think, but kind of not sure what the better name would be, but nobody likes the name. So, but the working groups are more, maybe focus groups would be a better way to say. And so you could have a marketing communications focus group, so we can have outreach to builders, and we can have communication to the holders in terms of what exactly is happening, right, for transparency. You could have governance working group, which is I'm running for, that helps, deals with budgets, deals with Ape Assembly, which like this smaller governing body within the DAO to make decisions go faster. So there could be a metaverse working group, which could be huge, right, involving even maybe there's a proposal right now for game publishing, right? Created like an Ape Coin DAO game publisher by Jonah Blake. That could be part of Metaverse Working Group. So right now the process is splitting into these focus groups, and the focus groups will then submit a budget to the DAO, right? So the focus groups have some autonomy, but they are still, everything has to be under the overall purview of the DAO. So the working group can say, hey, we think in the next 6 months, we want to bring in these experts, we want to, you know, organize these projects, this outreach, this whatever, we need $2 million. And the DAO then votes, and they, you know what, that's too much. That's, what do you mean? You're crazy. Or they say, that's too little, you should shoot higher, right? And if the DAO approves, then okay, the working group works for 6 months, and then they come back with a new budget. And if DAO disapproves, then the group has to revise the budget or eventually just dissolve if none of their budgets can get approved.
So I mentioned earlier in the podcast that one of the reasons I'm casting votes your way is because you've been in the DAO pretty much from day one. How has the DAO grown since then? Like in the early days, was there a lot of interest and it died off, or was there not really a lot of interest and it's just grown steadily over time? What does that DAO growth look like? And what has that election process done for that growth as well?
So I do know the history, but I am not a politician. I'm always have only one face. And so I will say I was there technically from the first time. I think I registered the day after it was created.
Oh.
But I did leave in the middle to travel and take care of my personal like well-being. There was, and now I'm like super back. I've been the most active member almost in the last quarter. So I'm trying to make up for that. But anyway,
Don't feel like you have to make up for that, right? Like we don't have to be here 24/7, well, folks.
I know. True. It's how I do, man. Everything I approach in life, I'm like, I'm a bit, I need to learn balance, which I have, but you know, I'm still kind of an overachiever. At the first, there was a lot of interest. I think there was, you know, excitement about a DAO, but people didn't know where to put that energy exactly. There were no good pathways or workflows or whatever you want to call it. And so people just like submitted random AAPs or just fizzled out because they really didn't know how to apply themselves in a DAO. In the middle, once we started seeing that the process is so slow and it takes sometimes months, you know, 3 to 5 months to get your proposal approved. And then after that, it would take 3+ months to get your money to even start it from the administrator, right? People just got really obviously disappointed and this unmotivated. So I think by the end of last year, before these last special council elections, the activity dropped. And then special elections came up, and you saw again, you saw some drama, you saw activity come up because there was already some built-up frustration. We were dealing with a decision to remove the previous administrator or not. So by the end of last year, end of 22, we had like, okay, new special election members, special council members, let's breathe in some new life into the DAO, but also like, let's deal with this administrator thing. And that, we didn't select a new administrator until February of this year. And then once we selected them, because we had to like put out a request for proposal, we had to say like, hey, who wants to be administrator, right? Who is in Cayman Islands? There's not that many. And so so two applied, one was selected. And then from February until probably April or March of this year, was just transition, because there's a lot of legal paperwork and transition from one administrator to another. So we're again, some delays, but now activity started building up because people knew, okay, new administrator, we're getting a bit more excited. And now with the working groups, I think we're seeing the most excitement, because now you see, like I said, before you didn't know where to channel your contributions. Now you have these channels, metaverse channel, marketing communications channel, hopefully treasury potential channel, governance channel, we can create others. So people are starting to see, okay, I can understand how to be contribute, but also for those of us who are, there are really great people in industry who would only put in full-time work if they're paid. And these working groups open up that opportunity. So it allows us to attract talent instead of saying, hey, everybody should contribute for free, which we all do, but like there's a limit to how much time you can spend.
Yeah, I can only categorize the reaction to the special counsel salaries as like super visceral. And obviously that has to do with the fact that ApeCoin is down, the bear market is continuing. So I think a lot of the emotions around that were tied to that and not necessarily to the special counsel salaries. The treasury is large. It's like one of the largest treasuries in the industry right now. Is it over a billion?
It was. Currently maybe. I think it's
almost price.
Yeah. It's about 400 million tokens right now. So
yeah.
I mean, two months ago it was well over a billion, and now it's like 800 to a billion.
Which I think highlights the really cool opportunities with Web3. Like to say that is owned by the owners of ApeCoin, right? Like that, and it really highlights it. But to some of the points that you just made, it has to be executed well, or you're going to start getting complaints. You're going to start seeing the negative sides come up.
We're just spinning in it then. If we don't bring in these builders and developers, if you don't fund projects, we are just paying ourselves salaries and slowly, trickling down the treasury. And also, who knows what happens with the token price. So there's no time to waste. Part of why I wanted to run is to be that voice for we need to be sure we're efficient. And I know I'll be perhaps biased once I'm there, but before I'm there, you can hold me accountable. I can say it. Like, if we don't have KPIs for each of these working groups, we don't have progress indicators, right? Like what we want to achieve, we need to have those first of all. And then if you don't achieve that, we need to cut number of stewards or cut the salaries, or we need to figure something out, right? Because we are expanding our budgets, administrative budget, which is fine. You can sometimes need to spend money to make money, as they say. I'm fine with that as long as we deliver, and now all this workforce has a focus that actually creates a result.
I'm interested, since you've been observing these AIPs for a long time, what AIPs that have been successful long-term, right? Like what have been funded and then returned something of value to the community for which it was kind of based for? It's been around. Again, these AIP proposals have been around for you tell me how long, and have there been any that really stand out in your mind, and has there been a colossal flop? I know you don't want to kind of get into negative territory, but again, not having any history or someone kind of listening, wondering that where we can learn from in the AIP proposals passing and not delivering value.
Sure. So we thankfully have not had colossal flops in terms of like either a rug or turns out to be a scam or just complete failure. We also haven't funded that much. So if you look, you can put in show notes if you want. There's a link to, like, there's this image I made with all the approved proposals in one place and the budget. So essentially, we paid out about $1.5 million per quarter, which is nothing. For the treasury of this size, it's tiny. So from that perspective, you can tell that even if one of them was a rug, like it's not a major rug by any means. But as far as the ones that I like, first I'll comment this. I do think the lack of like high quality, long-term projects, like we don't have games, right, that come and want to be funded yet. We don't have something like that. I think the biggest thing we had was Ape Water that came through and they asked for $3.25 million. And unfortunately, the community did not like a lot of things in their proposal. But that type of project, when you have a beverage company, right, wanting to start, I think the type of project is the kind of types or the kind of scale that I would like to see in the DAO, because those things can have mass effect either on, you know, non-Web3 people, just in general, like they can be like in every household. And that's what's cool. Like if you can have a product that's in every household, that's amazing. And that's something that this treasury should fund. Now, specifically for A-Water, like I said, they've had whatever issues and but I would love to see that. So we haven't had many of those. We had, but some of the successful ones, like there was, everybody knows is this carpet project where all they requested is the use of the logo for the ApeCoin. And it's this this group of Indian carpet makers that handmade carpets, right, of the ApeCoin logo that you can get. And so they asked for $0. But now, because everybody knows they passed a proposal, people are buying their carpets. And so they're selling the product just based on, you know, retweets and word of mouth. So that was an interesting thing where, you know, you think you need to ask money, but really sometimes it's just about the license. There was the cards. I don't know if you got the Forever Apes cards. So the playing cards that have tremendous art and like, you know, apes on them. So there's AP usage. You know, when you play poker or whatever, you want to get a pack of cards. Why not have cards with Bored Apes?
Yeah.
So that was really cool. We have another one that's where we sponsored ETH Global Hackathon, which is kind of ongoing, where we give sponsorship money to this one of the biggest hackathons in Ethereum, right? And we ask these devs to create interesting designs. So it's like almost like micro grants to these developers. There were some really cool ideas. I just retweeted their tweet, I think yesterday or the day before, about one of these hackathons and the finalists, and a couple of the finalists were working on ApeCoin integration. So from that, I think will come bigger ideas as well. But yeah, we need, there is more that I can name, just but the thing is, they're smaller to medium at best. And we need like these bigger fish, I think, and people dreaming big and come in and try to submit proposals.
The community almost gets sticker shock, it feels like, when you ask for a proposal that says, oh, I want to create this large scale, you know, a project that can go worldwide or anything like that, but it's going to cost me $2-3 million. The community is like, wait, this to be done for free, or why can't we fund a proposal for $5K? It's like, again, you need to spend money to make a little money. But
well, I'll tell you what. So I'm actually trying to do something about that because, of course, it's sticker shock. When we give money right now, we just give it, right? In general, unless the author asks to give it in chunks, we give it as one thing. And for a community to approve a big amount as one transaction, it's really hard. Mm-hmm. You need to really trust the author. You need to really feel like the project is going to be successful. So it's a lot of pressure on the author to be an immense saleswoman, and you know, have this incredible presentation, et cetera. So which, again, is not every founder. You can have great founders who just don't have that specific skill. So I after election, I'll finish and push it through. Right now, it's in draft stage. Is a proposal to like make it progress-based funding, where we give a portion of the funding and then they report back to us on their progress. Then we give the next portion, the next portion. And I'm hoping that's going to help community approve bigger projects easier, because they know that at most we're going to lose a percentage of the funds, right? We're not giving everything away at this immediately. So that should give people some easier, like an ease around approving these larger grants, I hope.
The last question I really did have was whether you study other DAOs and have studied the history of other DAOs that have occurred in this space. Obviously, some are still here. A good amount have survived, but of course, there's going to be churn along with a lot of these projects. But we've seen MakerDAO, Uniswap has a fairly large DAO. Have you looked at some of these other communities that in other DAO organizations and said, hey, this is what we can take and utilize in ApeCoin?
I do need to look more than I have, frankly. I've looked, of course, at some. I know many are pushing for like for us to be more like Nouns DAO, for example. The thing is, a lot, you know, you look at other DAOs and you can say, hey, they've done some stuff. And then you start looking under the cover, right? And you start, you know, and our holders ask, like, what has ApeCoin DAO done? Well, if I have ENS name, you know, I have ENS extension. Do I know what an ENS DAO has done? I have no idea. You know, I think most holders of these DAOs have no clue. So it's sometimes it's a bit of a juxtaposition where we see a one or two success stories, or, you know, we have this impression of another DAO and we think they're the exact thing to follow. But once you start dig down, you know, deeper, you'll find either the thing works specifically for them. So, for example, there's a bunch of DAOs like Ukraine DAO, you know, used to be Pleaser DAO, you know, even Constitution DAO that became popular. But like a lot of the DAOs, most DAOs have very narrow missions, right? They're like, we're dealing with this. We're going to raise money to do this, or we're going to, you know, work in this vertical. We're going to fund only this type of project, whatever. And I think that's amazing because it really makes them very efficient, but it is not what ApeCoin DAO is at all. We have one of the widest missions of all DAOs. We're like, we want to push Web3 culture into metaverse.
What does that
mean? What does it mean? Tell us what it means, you know? Like, why did you write this on ApeCoin.com? And, you know, so like we now, the holders, we're trying to decipher what the creators of the DAO kind of like put on there. There's actually a proposal by BetTeeth to clarify mission statement, because without knowing exactly what we're doing, where we want to focus, it's very hard. There's another proposal trying to like say, okay, this year, next year, we're focusing on these regions in the world in terms of like international expansion, right? There's a lot of this movement about bringing focus. So for that reason, a lot of the structures of other DAOs just don't apply here for now because of focusing so wide. And a lot of us like that wide focus because we want to fund, like we want to see this as a real engine of Web3 culture and innovation, right? Like, and what that means is we have to fund a variety of proposals. You know, we have to have this wide swath, but it makes us slower. It makes us like a bigger machine, and you need some structure around it. So now we're trying to create this structure, right? So you asked, like, have you looked at other DAOs? We are looking at other DAOs, but because their mission is not as wide, or they have some unique component, like Nouns DAO has income that constantly comes in, right? We currently cannot legally accept any money into this DAO. And there's conversation how to potentially make this happen, or like how working groups can maybe accept their own kind of like revenue and recycle that. But so for these reasons, a lot of the times when people think like, just do it like that DAO, or you know, we can try to borrow some of the governance structures or ideas. But in general, I think this DAO is very unique, both in its size, in its wide mission scope, and therefore like what kind of infrastructure we have to create to make it work. And honestly, none of the DAOs, like if you ask people in those other DAOs, there are a lot of happy holders and then a lot of unhappy holders. I don't think as a DAO, as a concept, we have figured it out as crypto community. I think there's so many unknowns still. And in a way, I don't want us to just copy another DAO. I want us to try to experiment and, you know, see, fail sometimes, but hopefully come up with something that works for ApeCoin.
Yeah, you mentioned that general kind of overview the goal that ApeCoin is trying to get to is essentially very broad. Well, that can be super dangerous when it comes to not being efficient with the money that we have, right? Yeah. It's not as focused, to your point. So setting up those structures is super important. You mentioned one thing in that last statement, not being able to accept money into the DAO. Mm-hmm. Is the value then supposed to be driven back into ApeCoin itself, or how do that? I feel like that's maybe something we can extract from that convo. Like, I feel maybe at some point we need to start bringing money into the DAO.
Yeah. So the conversations, I did not start the DAO, right? So I do not know the original intention, perhaps in the necessarily. So it could be the original intention was to just give away money, with the idea that if we do that, we're going to create enough infrastructure, enough utility, enough interesting projects to where there'll be enough buzz and utility for the coin to where it becomes, you know, worth it or whatever, in whatever non-necessarily monetary sense, but like it becomes valuable in just like as a principle, as people want to have it, people want to use it, it's cool. Or maybe the intent was just so, hey, we have money, let's give it away. This is a thank you to the community, right? They helped us raise this. They, you know, this is, we just sponsor all these culture projects, because you have to remember, Yuga is about culture. Like, people can say whatever they want about venture funding, this and that. Look at the founders. They're like geeks, nerds, you know, writers, video gamers. They're just, they're culture. And I think, yeah, you have to accept money to build something, but they seem to just really care about that. So maybe for them, it was like, we hope this money goes just directly into culture. Mm. We just believe in that. Like, this is a principle, life principle for us. It's not a matter of money. It's not a matter of profit. Or they maybe thought that we're going to figure out the profit part later. So the profit part now, so the reason why we don't accept, because there are potential taxation problems with that. Once you start accepting money, there is, you know, are you investing money as a DAO and then taking? So now you're making return potentially. So now is the ApeCoin going to be a security? Because definition of that is, you know, you're trusting that somebody else's work is going to increase the value of the token. So it's an interesting thing where if DAO activities have impact on the token, they need to be indirect. Like, we're never in the DAO are we discussing the token price, like, never. Mm-hmm. Because if we think about that, if you try to work on that somehow, then we are working on behalf of the community to increase a price of token, which is immediately makes it a security. And so this is not a this cannot be a concern for us legally, and it is not. Now, as far as DAO sustainability, so we can have money to continue operating and give out the funds, that's the part that's really interesting. And right now, there are multiple potential avenues. One of them is to create maybe an investment arm that can accept money back and then eventually donate it to DAO if they want to. But, like, again, if you create an investment arm and make it a legal agreement that, hey, all the profit you make, you have to donate back to the DAO, how is it different from taking income, right? You basically have... But if you create an investment arm and then they decide voluntarily to eventually donate back to the DAO, I mean, anybody can donate to a foundation, right? To, like... nonprofit, whatever. I know it sounds easier in people's minds, but, like, on legal, these small definitions, like, these, there's difference and it matters.
It feels a little bit like the conundrum we're in right now with NFT projects not even wanting to launch a token because the regulatory stuff hasn't been worked out, right? Yeah. Like, ApeCoin actually took a major risk by even, or the Yuga basically took the risk by launching ApeCoin DAO. So I commend them for doing that, because it then lays out some sort of framework that we can move forward with. But a lot of NFT projects won't ever launch a token until we get regulatory clarity. It's that simple.
Yeah. So whatever we move, we have to be very careful to make sure we are within compliance. We have to be in compliance.
I love that, man. I've got you here for about 10 more minutes. Let's dedicate it towards your election here. Let's dedicate it toward the platforms that you want to run. I will say, from a personal perspective, again, I mentioned the activity piece of that I appreciate. One other piece that I've already seen is that you're trying to have multicultural or multinational community members within ApeCoin. And that's, I think, super important. We're seeing the Asian narrative play out in real time, in my opinion, from what we've seen. So that's going to be super important for Apes going forward in Yuga in general. And then the other piece, at least from a personal perspective, is Ape utility, right? I'm an ApeCoin holder. Mm-hmm. You know, I would love to see utility put into the token in some perspective. We're seeing Forge, we're seeing Legends of the Mara, but I would love to get your perspective on all that. So anyways, I know that's a long-winded statement there, but let's dive in.
Well, you kind of like lobbied it for me, so thank you in terms of the points, right? If we're not funding builders, if you're not creating utility for ApeCoin, the whole DAO is pointless. You can also create culture pieces, et cetera, but our main center focus is, okay, ApeCoin has to have uses that are cool, and we have to create things that excite people. So that's my number one thing that I clearly understand. And even though I'm running for a paid position, I am with that. And I will bring accountability and transparency to this job, to where we have to move that forward, and we can't just be paying ourselves. Even when I ran for special counsel, I committed to giving up 30% of my salary and returning it to builders, because I was it's too much money for me, right? So that's the first thing. The second is international, you mentioned. Yeah, I know I'm a white guy, but I'm from Ukraine, immigrated to US. I've lived also, my parents are in Canada, so I've lived there a bit too. Now I'm in Asia right now. I'm, you know, doing this from Thailand. I've been in Asia for about a year now, and I intend to spend another couple of years. I think there are some African countries as well that are, you know, coming up with good talent, people getting into Web3. There's so much international talent. Perhaps especially, like I said, in Southeast Asia and just Asia in general, that people just don't understand how native crypto is here, how it's becoming. Like Vietnam is 50% crypto native. We keep talking about onboarding normies, and you come here and everybody is a normie or crypto native rather, right? Like the normal thing is to understand what crypto is, if not be in it, but at least like, oh, I'm well aware of it. So we and like I said, super high talent, like education systems are great. People work very hard, people are hungry to make a change and do something in the world. Not bringing this community in, not just as a lip service, but like being here, reaching out, traveling, doing the events, right? Like, do we need to add languages to the DAO? Do we need to add AI translation? Do we need local chapters? Like, what problems are they facing every day? How can ApeCoin DAO help with whatever local things, even regulation can represent? We probably, you know, there's legal problems there potentially, but can we be sort of evangelists in their local space for crypto with them and help them in that sense? Super important. I think the DAO is pretty West heavy right now. So that's why I'm like, I'm traveling. I hope to change that as much as I can and give voice to all these communities, because it'll make DAO much stronger, in my opinion.
Yeah, are there any specific examples? I want to dive into this multinational piece here, because you seem to be living the digital nomad life to the fullest. So I definitely like am living vicariously through you here. But
come to Thailand, man. Meet you at the airport.
Bro, careful with that. I might take you up on it. But as far as like giving specific anecdotes of like the influence of these different countries in the Bored Ape Yacht Club, right? Like that's what I'm interested in is like,
you'll see it soon. So there are rumors, first of all, and I know the answer, but I can't put it on here, but you know, the rumors about the next Ape Fest, I think you'll see that question answered when it comes to the announcement of the next Ape Fest. Look at just even what's happening in regulation. Hong Kong is becoming one of the most crypto-friendly territories, right? You just had...
Sounds like you want to say Ape Fest is in Hong Kong this year, which I've heard rumors about. But
So there have been many rumors. What I hope is the true final rumor or the truth is that there are multiple locations. Maybe not necessarily at the same exact time, because maybe you want the founders to be able to fly from one place to another, but maybe the same week or two where we as a global community can experience it. Because a lot of Americans don't understand that the visa situation in US is very strict. And for a lot of these holders, even if they have the money, they just can't get into the country. And so we've essentially rugged them from events for 2 years. And it would be incredible for Yuga to think of that and give a chance for international community to, you know, to congregate in other places. It's huge here. Like Hong Kong has, I think, hundreds of apes. Malaysia, there's Malaysia club with dozens. There is Philippines club with many dozens. I'm not sure if they're over 100, but could be. We have, you know, China, obviously. We have Japan, South Korea, right, club. Like Thailand. Thailand is one of the also friendliest like crypto regulation countries. Vietnam is like popping off, man. Vietnam is really, people don't understand how tech savvy the country has become and how advanced it is in like in the cities and just how, yeah, they're, I love Vietnam. I think they'll really be on the map in a much bigger way very soon.
I love all the positive momentum that I feel, just in energy I feel from you when you're talking about crypto in these countries, and it feels like the exact opposite we're getting in the US right now.
The exact opposite from the West. Yeah. Yeah, like this is the thing. You come here, it's like, so even look at the Machaverse, right? So we have this huge delegate that bought, now has 1.7 and three quarters million votes.
Shout out to Yatsuyu.
Yeah, Yahtzee, exactly. Yahtzee's, you know, he's doing such a good work traveling and connecting and just behind the scenes, crazy. And they, you know, they're becoming big delegate, but they're the Mochaverse collection. I mean, Animoca Brands, first of all, is headquartered in Hong Kong, right? Animoca Brands is invested in almost every Web3 game there is, right? It's an immense presence. If you're in Web3 gaming, you cannot escape Animoca, and Animoca is here in Asia, right? And that goes for a lot of different other gaming companies. And it's, so Mochaverse is like a community that bought a share in ApeCoin DAO, and there, you know, a lot of them are Asian based. There's a lot of Chinese and Hong Kong based community there in Taiwan. So it's just I was oblivious to that too. Like I said, I started traveling a year ago to Asia, and immediately I realized just what's happening. If you bring this community in in a meaningful sense, and the reason why I say bring them in is like people may say, okay, why don't they just join? Well, there are other DAOs to choose from. It's not just enough for us to exist. We have to make this DAO the most appealing one for them and the most friendly, right? And whether it's through translation or just in general, no gatekeeping, and or just reaching out to them and telling that we exist, right? And hey, we have this treasury, come build with us. All these steps need to be taken so these builders don't go elsewhere.
It almost feels like we need to be using AIPs to set up embassies in these different countries, like ape embassies.
Right.
Like that would be a great, I think, value add for what we're trying to do, growing the brand in all these different countries. So,
yeah, there are some people thinking that direction. Yeah.
Okay. All right. We're not going to talk about the Hong Kong Ape Fest that I'm going to have to plan after this conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
But
that is definitely not in the middle of October. Yes.
All right. Wow, I'm excited. Anyways, let's get into the timeline here. I appreciate you laying out some of the platforms that you are kind of running on here. It's a close race, first of all. I'm excited to see how it finishes up. Definitely want to make sure people know where to go. You don't have much time. It's less than 24 hours if you're listening to this. So definitely throw your ape behind Sasha here. But how do they do so?
Yeah, you go to a snapshot. Snapshot.org. I don't know why I was. I should know this. And then you go, there's a little search or whatever. You can just type ApeCoin, right? To see, find the ApeCoin DAO. And there's a governance working group. Like the first two things are like special counsel and governance working group, you know, election things. And click on governance and then just cast your vote. If you have any ApeCoin. Now, you have had to have ApeCoin by last Tuesday because it takes a snapshot of the wallet. So you technically cannot buy at this moment and then vote.
How does it work with staking?
If you're officially staked on apestake.io, then it should work just fine. You just connect the same wallet and you should see it. If you stake with third parties like Paraspace or BenDAO, then it's unfortunately not going to work. You have to unstake to vote.
Okay. Any last things you want to get out to the community as far as why they should be voting for you? And
yeah, so check out my Twitter, NFT Sasha, right? And there's a pinned thread with more information, qualifications. You should vote for whoever you feel is most qualified. I'll be frank. I hope that's me, but I think I'll do a great job. But what I want to bring is like transparency. I'm big on that. We need to really communicate to holders what we're doing. We need to record the meetings. You know, we need to make sure the chats are open. Everybody feels welcome. I'm big on efficiency. Like I kept saying, you know, we can't just be spending money on administrative without delivering. And I'm big on international community. Without the builders, we're nothing. We're just an administrative shell, almost like a shell company. So if you feel those are important, if you want somebody who has integrity, like I've never shielded a meme coin or any coin. I think like that kind of integrity and judgment are valuable in governance job. I hope I'll represent those well. It'd be an honor to serve the community. Passionate about this DAO going the right direction. So thank you.
I couldn't be happier to have you on the show, man. Thank you for laying out everything as far as the election process and your thoughts on the DAO and where we are essentially headed. I guess my last question is, as far as special counsel goes, that's another tightly contested race. Who would you be voting for? Who are you throwing your weight behind? You hate this question? We could totally
of
not
course.
Do it.
Because I like multiple people on that are running. And one of the best things about running myself is that I can just vote for me.
Yeah.
I don't have to make the selection, which is hard. Yeah, so while I did also run for special. Man, it's it's hard. I would, if I had to choose in cast mode right now, I'd probably vote for Swiki. I think, again, there's at least three or four incredible candidates there, but Swiki brings culture with her. And I like she's saying, I agree. I think she will signal to a lot of builders that, you know, this is a place to apply first, right? Instead of going to investors or a different DAO, we should try ApeCoin DAO first. And having that figure at the top, she's also just brilliant, right? She knows how to run organizations. She has experience even in DAO, in like grand distribution themselves. So she's qualified. That's a given. But specifically, what she brings on the culture side, and I just know her IRL. She's a great person. So
awesome. All right, I appreciate you laying out somebody you like to vote for there.
Yeah,
that could be. That's a little bit of a hardball question. So you got it, man.
It's a hard one. It's a hard one, man. Yeah.
All right, I'll let you go. I know you're still on the trail right now, so you probably have multiple spaces to do today. Sasha, it was great to meet you, brother.
Hi, brother.
Good luck.
Thank you all. Bye.